My name is Sally Steenland, and I direct the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative here at the Center for American Progress. With me today is Reverend Emma Akpan, who works for Blueprint North Carolina in Raleigh, where she builds coalitions of charitable organizations to influence state policy through grassroots advocacy. Blueprint North Carolina focuses on reproductive health, affordable housing, and higher wages. Last year, Emma participated in the Moral Monday protests at the state capitol, where she offered a closing prayer on Reproductive Rights Advocacy Day. Emma has a Master's of Divinity from Duke University, where she was co-coordinator of the Divinity School's Women's Center. She serves on the board of NC Women United and has volunteered with NARAL North Carolina, Planned Parenthood, and the North Carolina Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Emma is also an ordained deacon at St. Paul's AME Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome, Emma. So good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Sally.
Let's start by talking about the Moral Monday protests, because they're getting increasingly well-deserved coverage in the press. So I want to ask you about the protests as they started in North Carolina, and you were there. Give us a snapshot of what the protests are about and what they look like.
The protests have been amazing. So they began last April as a response to the attacks on education, the voter ID bill, cuts to unemployment benefits, and the repealing of the Racial Justice Act. So the North Carolina NAACP, they organized a relatively small group of people last April, and Reverend William Barber decided that he was going to speak out against these cuts to education and all the other things I listed. And then after speaking for a minute, they would go into the legislature and practice civil disobedience. They did this by entering and remaining after they were asked to leave. Reverend Barber was one of the first people arrested that day. So since that first Moral Monday, it grew exponentially. I believe these Moral Mondays energized North Carolinians about the important issues. And, of course, people all across the South, it's getting a lot of national attention, and we've been focusing on the voter ID bill, which, of course, will hurt North Carolinians at the polls. And we've been focusing a lot on these types of education. Yeah.
And tell us about who, when you go to a protest, who's there with you?
Everybody is there with
me. Everybody.
I usually arrive alone, but I meet up my friends there. I know last week I wasn't planning on doing anything, but my friend was standing there from Planned Parenthood with petitions. So I grabbed a clipboard and signed up people, asked people to sign a card that supports Medicaid expansion in the state of North Carolina. As you probably already know, that our state decided not to expand Medicaid, and we're rallying around that now. So when I go, I always see my friends there, and we talk to each other, and we sing together, and it's a lot of fun, and it excites a lot of anger, of course, because when you think about all the social policies that they cut, that is hurting our lives and the lives of us and the lives of our friends.
And it sounds very multi-generational, too, that there's young people, there's middle-aged people, there's old people, that it feels like a really broad spectrum of people from North Carolina.
Yeah, it's been really amazing. Most people bring their kids, people bring their dogs, and I've seen college students out there with petitions and just participating. We have different sets of workers come in, the social workers come out, the doctors. Everybody is concerned about the issues in North Carolina, because it's affecting them. This is not just and these are not things that they're just far off and affecting people far away from us. Like, they're direct actions against us.
Right. That's exactly right. And it sounds like it's democracy in action, which is quite remarkable. And it also sounds like it's spreading to other states. I want to pick up on what you said about Medicaid, because you talked about that as one of the issues. And there's like a huge range of issues that you were talking about. But the governor is refusing to expand Medicaid, which has really serious consequences for all the people in your state, including women. Can you just say something about that?
Right. Well, for Medicaid to be expanded, there needs to be some legislative action. So just today, we had a press conference about Medicaid expansion, and we sent 25,000 petitions to Tom Tillis, who is the Speaker of the House in North Carolina, asking him to expand Medicaid for North Carolinians. Expanding Medicaid affects women, because without Medicaid coverage, women aren't going to be able to get the prenatal care they need. They're not going to be able to get the contraceptive coverage they need and other the myriad of health concerns that women have, because women across the state are worrying about feeding their families and trying to go back to school and putting gas in the car. And I think health care should be the least of their worries while they're trying to raise families and provide a financial future for themselves.
Yeah, health care is really crucial. And of some of the things you mentioned in terms of prenatal care and caring for your families, those are part of what we call reproductive justice and what you work on in terms of reproductive justice issues. And you helped bring the issue of reproductive justice into the Moral Monday protests. And as I said in the introduction, you actually gave a closing prayer at one of the protests. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how that happened and then also how reproductive justice as an issue is linked to those other justice issues that you named?
Right. Well, I didn't personally quite bring in reproductive justice, but our partners at NC Women United and Blueprint asked the NAACP to talk about reproductive justice at one of the Moral Mondays. So it came about last summer around July. There were two bills that were introduced in a matter of a week attacking abortion clinics and contraceptive coverage for North Carolinians. And one of them called the motorcycle, the motorcycle vagina bill, which effectively closed abortion clinics across the state. So,
wait a minute, what, the motorcycle vagina bill?
Okay, let's back up. So
let's unpack that, right.
Senate Bill 353. And originally, it was a bill about motorcycle safety, helmet regulations and all that stuff. But they've attached these other regulations abortion clinics.
Oh, my gosh.
And, it was little stuff like the size of the hallway or the length of the hallways or whether or not your clinic has an awning on it. Or it was trying to have the same regulations as a hospital and an abortion clinic. But we know that for abortion clinics, you don't need the same regulations as a hospital because abortion is not surgical.
Right.
So the bill was passed, and it effectively closed many of the abortion clinics in North Carolina, and that was at the beginning of July. So after that happened, a group of women's coalition leaders went to the NAACP and said that this is an issue that's important to a lot of us. And we should probably talk about that. So Reverend Barber agreed to just have one more on Monday where we just talk about women's issues as a result after these attacks. So that's how the July 15th Women's War on Monday was planned. And it's sad the events had to come out in that way, but I'm happy that we were able to stand as women together against many issues, including reproductive health.
Right. You've talked about the importance of having the reproductive justice movement be inclusive. And can you say what you mean by that? And then also what's happening in North Carolina to help make the movement more inclusive?
What's happening in North Carolina is, I'm going to tell you my personal story. I work in the triangle, which is kind of the center of politics here. And it's difficult to remember women in rural areas. And we are very aware that we're not the only people at the center of the movement, but we kind of talk like we are. So at the beginning of January, two of the largest women's coalitions, we've attended an anti-racism workshop, and we're dedicated to being more inclusive in our activism. So that includes focusing on relationship building with women across the state and make sure that we're collaborating with women and learning about what issues are important to them instead of staying in our own bubble and deciding for ourselves what issues are important to women. So we're going to do that in quite a few ways. And one of the projects we're working on is a bus trip to stand in solidarity with Marissa Alexander.
Yeah.
Sister Song is based in Atlanta, and they're coordinating just a bus trip to stand in solidarity with her. And we're making it a reproductive justice issue because since she's been tied up in the legal system for almost 4 years, she's been away from her three children. So it's a perfect opportunity for us to understand that reproductive justice is about race, it's about class, it's about gender. And a lot of times, Black women are handled very unfairly in the justice system. And if you don't know much about the Mercer Alexander case, she shot two warning shots while she was running from her abusive husband. And she tried to use the Stand Your Ground defense, which is in Florida, but she was denied, and she was convicted with aggravated assault. And now she's facing 20 years in prison. And at the end of July, her case will be retried. And that's when we're going to go down to, you know, march and mm-hmm. stand with her. Because what happens when you talk about women's issues, a lot of times we forget the racial disparities and the economic disparities. And it all intersects and it all affects us. So we can't just focus on repro justice. It's just they're taking away my contraceptives, or they're taking away my right to have an abortion. But they are taking away the right to even raise children in a healthy manner, especially when you're cutting pre-K programs and food stamps and cuts to education. Like, we can decide to have children, but what kind of, we want to bring them up in a world where they're going to be healthy and happy or not. We shouldn't have to worry about our own health care. We should be worrying about providing food and education for our children.
Yep. Thank you. That's a great mm-hmm. sort of explanation and rationale for the importance of reproductive justice and how we live as whole people. I mean, you don't just like this mm-hmm. part of my life is a mother, this part of my life is a worker, how it's really all connected and how families and children need to be raised with dignity. So thank you for that. I want to, you mentioned contraception earlier and prenatal care and all the rest. And I want to take us back to the Supreme Court, which is actually going to be ruling this month on a really important case, which is what's called the Hobby Lobby case. But what it has to do is whether corporations, for-profit corporations, can claim religious liberty when their owners object to providing contraceptive coverage in the health care plans under the Affordable Care Act. And that's contraceptive mm-hmm. coverage at no cost, which is a important health benefit for women. And there are all pieces to this. So there's women's health, there's religious liberty. What are your thoughts on the case and the possible decision? Because we don't yet know what it's going to be.
Well, in the Bible, it says to work out your own faith and salvation with fear and trembling. So what the Hobby Lobby and other employees are saying about religious liberty is the complete opposite of religious liberty.
It's true.
They're using their religion to take away rights of women that are working for them. And these women need adequate access to health care. And yes, I believe that covering contraceptives is health. It's about health. It's not about whatever assumption that you have about contraceptives. It's about making sure a woman is healthy. Women use contraceptives for many reasons, including regulating their cycles and to treat illnesses such as endometriosis. But even if women were using it for that, that's not really the point, right? We're not going to men and asking them what they're using their medicine for.
Right. No, that's true.
This should be a private issue between her and her doctor and exactly what she needs. So she's capable enough to decide how she wants to live out her faith and how to pray to her God and also to do what's best for her body, her family, and her finances.
That's absolutely true. I couldn't say it better myself. I like how you started that, your response in terms of quoting the Bible and working out your own faith on somebody else is not mm-hmm. exactly religious liberty. And I just a final question for you is as a leader in CAPS Faith and Reproductive Justice Leadership Institute, you're one of our wonderful leaders and. You know, I often ask our leaders this question, which is, you're bringing your faith into reproductive health rights and justice work. And they're often those two things are seen as opposed and not in the same sentence. So why do you connect the two? And why is that important? And what's even unique about that?
All right. Well, I'm going to quote the Bible again. And I was taught as a Christian, you're supposed to take care of people. And Jesus said, whatever you do for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. So as Christians, we're supposed to care about our brothers and sisters. And when you're taking health care away from women, then that's not caring about them. We have to, healthcare is important for the poorest and most vulnerable and disadvantaged people in our neighborhoods. And when the state decided not to expand Medicaid, you're literally killing people.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's right, just as a Christian. And also, secondly, I'm a young woman. So if all this stuff happens, it's going to happen to me and all my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the walking beneficiary of having my contraceptives covered in my health insurance. So this is just not an amorphous and disembodied issue. We're living and breathing capable women, and we just want what's best for our financial, spiritual, and emotional health and our futures. We know what we're doing. So
when sometimes
we know exactly what
you
going
know
on.
What you're doing. It's like, trust us, trust women.
Yes.
And when people, you know, sometimes don't see the connection between, like, oh, that federal public policy, whatever they do in Washington and the laws they pass, and my life and my body, you just made that connection actually pretty clear, right?
Yes, I remember the day where my birth control was free.
Yep. Yep.
And that was a direct result of policy.
Yep, that was.
So this is not just something elected officials are just doing. They're doing it to me.
Yeah.
So, and me and my friends and my community, and especially my faith community. So I don't think this should be a debate. We should just, healthcare should not be a debate. Like, yes, we can talk about, I would debate you about any issue, but when it comes to taking care of people and their bodies and health, that we shouldn't argue about it.
In the richest country in the world, we should be able
in
to take care of
world, yeah.
people who are sick, both economically and because of our faith. And it's also what's exciting about what you're doing is it's faith in action, and it's democracy in action too, because that's how you make change, right? By being involved.
Right, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for this work and for talking with us today. It's really been terrific. Thanks, Emma.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.